You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Here's a stupid thing people love to say. The simplest review is always correct. Well, I never took those reviews. For a while. You want to know how I did it? I already told you. Pay attention. Opinions, specifically our opinions, matter. When we sail these rolling waters of the data stream, we leave the real world behind. And let me tell you who didn't pay for the privilege. You all know Mr. Chris Cox by name and reputation. Every guest aboard this vessel is important because every one of them is important to Mr. Chris Cox. He sails with his right hand, Bradley. Brad has launched many enterprises, all of which have failed.
Aww.
Their minion, Luwain, is expected to, well, just continue as a minion reviewer as he always had. But this was no simple case of nepotism. Luwain has certain peculiarities.
Hey now.
I'm Mindy, the world's greatest critic, or at least somewhat entertaining. Rumor has it we'll be revealing the hidden thoughts and feelings behind the latest Hulu murder mystery, Death and Other Details, starring the great Mandy Patinkin. I don't like coincidences. Trust nothing. No one. Except this you can trust.
And me and all my failed enterprises.
Indeed. Like being the core reviewer for this review. Oh, burn. Anyway. But yes, hello everyone. As I said, I am Mindy and we are here to discuss Death and Other Details, the very brightly colored of Pierrot Agatha Christie-inspired murder mystery that Hulu has now dished out to us. And before we get into too many details, which honestly we really can't because spoilers, who would like to give a synopsis of this story that doesn't have to be redacted?
I'll give it a shot.
Good luck.
Yeah. According to IMDb, Detective Rufus Coatsworth and his protege Imogen dig for the truth on a Mediterranean ocean liner where everyone is hiding something. And all of that is true and yet misleading because this is a mystery. There are a lot of other layers to it. Coatsworth is considered the world's greatest detective because of incidents that happened decades before that tie in with Imogen, who is an orphan living with a wealthy family, well, who grew up with a wealthy family. The wealthy family has this trip planned with all of these people associated with them. So there's a bunch of, like, insanely filthy rich people on a boat.
Specifically, they are the Colliers who have this big Collier Mills empire.
Right, and then there's the Chun family and a handful of other things, and everything is weirdly incestuously related because one of the Collier's exes is there with the Chuns, and her current wife is, everyone thinks, is paranoid, and her brother's basically every drunken stoner frat boy you've ever encountered with a pile of money, and her parents are in a sort of a weird relationship now, and they have a skeezy lawyer, and then somebody gets killed, and what starts off as a simple murder investigation escalates out until it basically involves every single named character on the ship.
And over all of it is the underlying mystery of who killed Imogen's mom.
Yep, like 20 years ago.
When she was a little girl.
A wee lass.
That's where she first met Detective Rufus. Because he questions her on, right, what she saw, if she remembers anything specific. He's just trying to gather all the details, you know.
And also tries to teach her the ways of the detective so that they mm-hmm. both have this detective mind going into it.
Things got crazy when he gave the little 8-year-old, like, scotch, no rocks, if you want to be a detective.
Which just took me to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. So, normally I don't review series because I just don't have the time to devote to them, but I'm like, oh, it's Mandy Patinkin. I'll make it work.
That's why I jumped on it.
Plus, they drop them, you know, weekly, so I have time to get caught up, usually. But what was interesting as this gets further along is it kind of becomes like watching Watson solve the mystery because mm-hmm. you realize that Sherlock maybe can't do what he used to do anymore.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good point.
Well, Elementary did that. Sure. Yeah, but I thought was interesting is the way that they visualized the detective work. Because mm-hmm. I mentioned before, this is a very colorful show. Boy, it kind of reminds you, I mean, I mentioned Pierrot. It felt very 50s in regards to like mm-hmm. its color scheme and the way things were laid out. And the way that both Mandy Patinkin, as you know, Rufus quotes with, the entire time it's just Mandy Patinkin, and Imogen, mm-hmm. the way that they would jump into memories and mm-hmm. the way that like at one point Imogen is listening to Coatsworth and it plays as though Imogen is inside the body of Coatsworth.
Right.
And there's a thing where she goes into her memories as a little girl and she's following herself as a little girl. And then you have this, you know, memories of like one of the, you know, people talking to each other. And then one of the two of them is there in the room asking questions in the modern day as mm-hmm. the flashback is playing around them. And it was such a unique and interesting way of showing clues and showing information that was mm-hmm. colorful and engaging. And then it wasn't just a, you know, Perot detective asking questions and interrogating people, which I thought was a really, really cool dynamic to add.
Yeah, like the scene doesn't have an accusation parlor. I don't believe it does.
I mean, it does in that there are places where...
It kind of does it, yeah.
Yeah, it's like there are points where people are like all called into a room and information comes out. But it's not mm-hmm. I'm a detective and I am going to interrogate you and then you and then you. That right. never happens. Yeah.
And that's one of the other things that's interesting about that is because it both plays with perspective and a little bit with time, you can almost get whiplash because you're like, I got this figured out now.
Nope.
And then it whips this other way and you're like, oh, well that completely, okay, now what?
And right.
And so there were points I was trying to just, I'm like, is that good writing or is that there to piss me off? or is it there to stretch the show out?
Right, like a 10-episode order. Like, was this a 10-episode story before the order? Maybe. By the end of it, nothing seems to be left unsaid. And every character, and what I think is the biggest tie-in to what people are calling an Agatha Christie novel, every single character has their own life and their own motivations and their own story yes. and their own secrets. And I thought that was very Agatha Christie. I enjoy that about her mysteries. And this definitely played that way as well. Not even the one thing that confused me is, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't think we ever find out who the captain of the boat is. And I think he would want to be involved in the murder mystery, in a murder on his own boat. But maybe I'm wrong
on
that.
That's true. They mostly just deal with the owner and then his various staff.
Yeah, it's the owner there and... Collier and his people, and then the head of the staff and her people are the mm-hmm. ones that are involved. But going
this
back,
drunken to... sea captain, like, sir, there's been a murder. One of the passengers is dead. And just see this Woody Harrelson-esque sea captain from the Triangle movie, like Tuesdays. Am I right? And he just avoids the whole thing.
Look, I got a ship to steer. You sort it out.
I will say that I really liked the fact that it did focus on all the characters in their lives. And granted, there is no captain. It's automated. Just go with it.
Yeah.
But every character tries in their own way to figure it out, which I thought was really refreshing, because normally in these types of murder mysteries is you have the detective, and the detective is there trying to figure things out. But in here, they acted like normal people, being like, somebody died. What the fuck? How do we figure this out? And so everybody is going off in their own directions for whatever motivations they have to try and figure out what's going on. And that added a whole bunch of different perspectives that you don't normally see in traditional murder mysteries, which I really liked.
Well, and that's just it, because everybody is a real person. Everybody is a genuine person. Like, they are a complete character. They know things that other characters don't know, and that either works for or against what's going on at any given point in time. There are shifting alliances, people that group together because of one thing and then completely break apart because of another and reform as a different group. I guess that's the thing about it that initially I referred to as whiplash and was like, do I see the writing? No, what I see is a bunch of people who don't do this, who now have to figure out how to do this.
Right.
Right? Like, I mean, yeah, Coatsworth is identified as a detective. And Imogen has been his student.
And he is a disgraced detective at that, because he didn't solve Imogen's mother's murder.
Right. But everybody else is just who they are.
Right.
Right? And most of them are rich people who've never had to deal with anything they couldn't just pay away. And that's not an option here. They have
to
just,
because everyone's rich on the boat, essentially, that feels like they would be in the most trouble. The red herrings in this, not great, but I do love the red herring character work. Like, every single one of these characters, except maybe Imogen, has this feeling of, well, this can't be pinned on me. We got to do something. And I thought, that is such a great motivation to, like, try and solve a murder, to think, I got skeletons. I don't want people digging into my life. And everyone came across as genuine in that as well. Like, yeah, but this Trip, his name is Trip, for crying out loud. Who knows what the hell he's done?
Well, and that's just it, because a lot of these, like, we've talked about Christie, right? Like, you have a detective, you know it's not them. Right. Like,
right.
They're the good guy. You can't really guarantee that even the people investigating this don't have something to do with what's going on because of the directions the story takes. You start off with Coatsworth and Imogen in their various ways. But you learn stuff about each of them that I'm like, I know you're the protagonist and you're the ones I'm following, but I don't know that I can necessarily eliminate you from all of this either. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting step to have taken as well. They don't really lean hard on it, but it's there.
Right. And then on top of that, adding Hilda Erickson, the secondary detective, that is acting not necessarily in congruency with Coatsworth, which adds an extra layer of dynamic to it.
It's wild. It really is. And we've talked about things it reminds us of, but, like, I don't know that I've seen anything quite like this. Right. And I joked before, as a writer, there are times I'll watch something and be like, I quit. I can't keep up with this. And this is one of those things partway through, I was like, oh man, they don't need me anymore. They've got whoever put this together.
And it gets so bonkers. These people have lived lives where have all had their hands in so many pies, with so many people, so much desire to be loved, but not like the way that, say, I would love my wife, the way that they want their reputation to be admired. It's very, very troubling to see people like that fall apart. Maybe not for everyone. Maybe this is a good, eat the rich, type of viewing for a lot of people. For me, I was troubled by just how lonely a lot of these actors have to portray themselves. Really, the standouts of that, by the way, I thought were Lauren Patton as Anna and Pardis Surimi as Layla. Oh, and of course, Violet Bean, who lost her mother as a child, playing Imogen. Kind of heartbreaking to watch. But other than that, as if that's a bad thing, it goes to some bonkers places in these investigations, and it gets all globetrotty even because of how wealthy these people are. Like,
right.
Oh, well, how much is in my offshore Swiss bank account? Like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what it would be like to, what does that check look like? Crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Well, we talked a lot about what we thought worked. Was there anything that you really didn't like? Any performance, any plot point? Is there anything that just didn't work for you?
Detective Rufus would constantly repeat, pay attention. There is details you must pick up on. Every detail can lead to a clue. But as the show goes on, people like go, or was it that? I'm like, come on. I can't solve this mystery if you're giving me fake information. And I usually overlook that because mysteries are so hard to write in the day where you can just Google search what do people think this mystery is going and usually have a 10% answer out of thousands of people guessing of getting it right. But to change the details after telling me to pay attention to them, not nice, Mandy Patinkin.
Well, that's one of the things, though, that is interesting about it, because he focuses on things like details and blah, 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 blah. Right, but then, when Imogen goes through some of these things, you realize the details are wrong.
Right.
And sometimes they're wrong because they've been told wrong, and sometimes they're wrong because memory is malleable.
Yes, very much so.
And that becomes very important later. And one of the elements that I found interesting about that is there's so much discussion of memory and shit, did I remember that right? Or I can't focus on this thing to remember the thing. And one of their breakthroughs comes because one of the characters' kids wants to be an influencer and has his damn phone out all the time. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they are able to solve the crime is because he had his camera going all the damn time and they literally saw what happened. Otherwise, nothing.
Well, cameras come into play at several points in the in the story. Like one of the initial things, one of the initial conflicts involves the erasing of security camera footage.
Right. Which, again, you have that same thing where we talk about memory being malleable. In this case, it's super malleable. It just goes away. But it plays with that a lot. And like you said, it does it with regard to technology, not just human memory. And so those are weird little things I found interesting in it. Like, I want to go back through and just watch it all at once, but I also don't ever want to watch it again anytime soon.
Aw.
Because the whiplash of it, and because I know what's coming, right? Like, I know I would watch it with a different perspective, but I also am not, I'm also not drawn along in the same way.
Well, that is the fate of mysteries, to be sure.
Right.
I did appreciate that it sets up a sequel series without being ambiguous to the mystery we just watched. Like, that's a rarity in this day and age to actually solve the murder completely. And the adventure continues.
I actually did. That was one of the things that I didn't like about it, because the mystery is so self-contained. It's like, this is done. Do we need to make this now a Scooby-Doo gang?
Right.
You know?
Well, but that's just it. The ending itself is also set in such a way that, I mean, there's a monologue at the end of it that basically, oh shit, I guess there's new things, but that doesn't mean they have to do them. Right. Like, if there is never another one, it doesn't matter. We just assume they either solved it or didn't or whatever. The mystery itself doesn't. You know that this group of people is capable of doing that thing. It's whether or not you want to watch them do it. I don't know that I do, but it was interesting that they set that up.
Well, I really liked the lead, Violet Bean. The only thing I've seen her in, and I wasn't a CW superhero show guy, so I missed out on all of that. But mm-hmm. I did see her in The Leftovers. That was me. I was the one guy with Nate that watched that. And she's fantastic. And I would be so happy if she actually got back on a series again, because mm-hmm. she's just so bright and vibrant. And I was rooting for Detective Rufus. But other than him being like, am I disgraced? Poor me. And like, oh, I could never stay mad at you, Detective Rufus. She was just so good as the lead, in contrast to everyone being all like, all right, I need to brandish my knife first and stab someone in the back before I get stabbed in the back. And everybody, even the kid with the camera, was thinking like that. And it was so exhausting on my poor, naive, small town head. Like, really? People are really this deceptive? My wife would pat my shoulder and be like, yes, honey. Dear. People are being stabbed in the back right now, and you don't even realize it in this show. And I'm like, oh, man, that's exhausting. But, yeah, in short, she's a great lead, and I'd love to see her get a second season crack at it as well.
And she spends so much of the time looking at everybody else like, what in the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
because she exists in that world, but she's not of that world, right? You know, she didn't grow up in it in the same way everybody else did. And so for her, every once in a while, she'll just look at anyone who's just behaving like an idiot. And what the hell? How could you do that to fill in the blank, you know, whatever the thing is? Because I'm filthy rich, that's why.
Yeah, their excuses made it 9 out of 10. Every excuse that people give in the show makes it worse.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of sounds like the beginning of a final thought. So once the clues have all been set in your brain, what else do you have to say, Bradley, to conclude this review?
I did not solve this mystery. I was way off the entire time. Even when I was swinging wild, which I know people take wild swings as a spoiler, but I was starting to be like a meteor the size of a penny. Not to say that means it's a bad mystery, just like, wow, I didn't arrange any of this together in my head at all. And that is this... It would require, I think, a second viewing to see how good are these threads put together, or is it just so shockingly written that there's just no way you could guess or figure it out? But then again, some side mysteries do have pretty good cluing to them, especially when, you know, there's a bunch of sexy hot people involved. So, yeah, my mom-in-law and... spouse couldn't make it to the very end. They're just too busy, and I had to binge most of it since it was easier to let them pile up and binge it so you can have all the details thrown all together. I think this is a fantastic lead. I'd love to see a second season. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 influencers that hashtag save me, hashtag boat pickup, hashtag like and subscribe.
And you, Luane, what is your clue accusation?
Damn, this looks really good. It sounds really good. The musical choices are interesting. All of it is, when they say colorful, we're talking like Wes Anderson colorful. Like, it is.
Yes.
It's like just watching it's like looking at an ice cream bar. It's just amazing. The mystery, there's this thing with a lot of mysteries where you basically watch the lead bumble along until they piss off the villain, and then they make a run at them, and that's how everything is revealed in a monologue. Others are designed so that the audience or the reader can figure it out. This is designed for you to follow the trail right along with the detective. Good luck trying to get ahead of anything. And that is either genius or madness. I'm not sure which. I liked it. I like not being able to know 10 minutes into a mystery who the hell did what. There were a couple of stretches, I think, on some of the stuff. I had some mixed feelings about the identity of one of the characters, but I'm like, if I get hung up on that one thing, I'm probably not going to be super thrilled with the rest of it. So I just kind of let stuff go. In the end, it is a satisfying watch. It's an entertaining watch. So I will give it 3.75 out of 5 spear gun.
I was watching it with my husband, and I know one of the things that he said, likening back to something you mentioned, Luwain, that he was really thankful that it wasn't just an evil villain going, "Bwahaha, here is my evil scheme, bwaha," and having it be that stereotypical thing. And yeah, this mystery, and this, I didn't mind the absurdity of some of the different pieces that get put together. And I think maybe it's just because I've watched so much Midsommar Murders where there's this mystery and they deliberately keep information from you so that there's literally no way to figure out how the mystery came to be. So the fact that you had so many pieces back and forth here and having the mindset of I don't have to figure this out because I'm just not going to, made it so that I could just sit back and enjoy the ride. And if you're willing to just sit back and enjoy the ride, you can see the colorful twists and turns that everything comes in. Sometimes they are fantastical to the point of, okay, really? But even then, if you're willing to suspend that kind of disbelief, it is a very interesting, entertaining ride and insanely colorful, and as you said, in a Wes Anderson way, it is very on the nose, which is also really nice to see in a murder mystery where a lot of them tend to be dark and brooding and bloody. This one is bright and colorful and sunny. It takes place on a cruise. Like, it has that lightness to it, which is a very interesting contrast between the juxtaposition of death and murder. So I enjoyed it a lot. Again, don't think too hard about who did it. Just follow the trail as the detectives are, and you will enjoy it, as I did. I don't know what they're going to do with the second season. I would kind of raise my eyebrows about setting that up because, as I said, it is so self-contained. But, you know, if the first season was as fun as it was, so will the second season, hopefully. So I am going to give it 8.5 stolen necklaces that I totally figured out how it was stolen. It was Mrs. White in the library with the candlestick.
You know, in retrospect, the murdering done with the items in Clue are all incredibly violent for a game 4 to 8 year old kids can play.
Yes.
Well, I mean, to be fair, anything where the theme is, hey, who murdered this dude in this guy's house is going to be a little iffy for children.